And welcome back to our Christmas program with our special guest this hour, Karen Anderson, the amazing afterlife of animals. We'll take your questions and your stories. Perhaps you could share something that we'd love to hear. For those of you who have been emailing me, yes, it is our tradition. We will end the program with our rendition of Letter from Michael. That will happen at the end of the program tonight as we wrap up our Christmas night show. We'll be back in a moment, though, with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And Karen's website is her name, KarenAnderson.net, linked up for you at CoastToCoastAM.com. Karen, we see these Hollywood-depicted movies of demonic animals, right? Rottweilers with red eyes and things like that. Do they exist on the other side? Are animals, in some cases, evil?
In the 20 years that I've been communicating with animals, I have never met a single evil animal. I have met some entities I didn't know what they were, but no, I have never come across that.
All right. Well, that's a good thing. So right. Is that Hollywood?
That's Hollywood. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there that we don't understand, and I certainly am intrigued by it. I do paranormal investigations as well, and whenever there's an animal, especially on the cases that I work on, again, I can rely on the animals in a house that's experiencing hauntings, and the animals can tell me what's going on. So I get all kinds of information from animals, but those that are on the other side, they are generally the purest, most beautiful, white light, beautiful energies that we loved here on Earth, and that's how I experience them.
A lot of people want to know if the animals miss the physical life when they pass on. Do they?
You know, missing is, that's kind of a human concept in the physical realm, because when animals are on the other side, they still get to experience everything that they experience when they're here, but they have a lot more freedoms. They're not restricted by a house or a yard, and they can come and go as they want. They could go with us to work or wherever we go. So missing, I don't think they miss it. I think that, if anything, they get to be with us more and be around us all the time. So missing is kind of a material thing that we feel here in the earth realm.
Karen, would you say this ability you have is a gift? It's not a curse.
Definitely a gift. I feel like it has been the greatest thing that has ever happened to me, and I am so glad that I followed this gift in my life, because it has made all the difference in the world.
Well, tell me more about that. How has it changed you?
Well, I started understanding animals. They were the very first friends that I had when I was really small, and I was probably closer to animals than most humans. And it was through the animals that I learned how to have a place in my heart and be more loving and be more kind and more open, just because of the love that they shared and the love that they showed me. And over the years in communicating with animals, it has opened me up to incredibly wonderful people and clients. Animal lovers are the best people in the world, and that's who my clients are. So I am blessed to be able to have so many wonderful clients and so many people who love their animals and want to do right by them. And that, to me, is... that's success right there.
And do you give people closure?
I think I do. I think I am able to give them a peace of mind that somehow escaped them before. But it is a group effort. The clients have to be open to the process. They have to be a part of the communication session. They have to realize that there is a bit of a translation process that occurs. And it really is, you bring good energy to a session, you're going to get good results from a session.
All right, let's go to the phones, and let's pick it up by going to Toronto. Dove is with us on the wild card line. Hey, Dove, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, George. Merry Christmas.
You too. I hope you had a great one.
Yes. No, well, maybe. Very solitude. And hi, Karen. Merry Christmas to you.
Hi, and Merry Christmas to you, too.
George, you're the only person I ever go to bed with these days, the only man.
I'm not even going to touch that.
I've been trying. Karen, you know, I was just in bed, and I heard you say, give a message to your loved pet, like sending an email. And I've been trying to get through to you guys for an hour at least, calling and calling. I finally went to bed. When I heard Karen say that, I decided, okay, I'll try one more time.
Okay,
if
good.
I
you got through.
If I finally get through, it'll be a sign from my little doggy. And I got through.
There you go.
It was wonderful. Anyway, I just wanted to share a little story with you. I'm a complete animal person, probably maybe worse than you. I just love them, and I feel very intuitive with around them, too. But I had a small dog, about 5 pounds, a few years back. She was a rescue dog, and she was deaf. And I communicated with her mentally, you know?
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Telepathy almost. And intuitively, she was the smartest animal I'd ever been around, and I've been around plenty of them because I love them so much. And they're like children for me, you know. And anyway, she passed. She was deaf, but I taught her sign language. Anyway, she passed. And then I started to have a few problems with, just people in general that I met on a dating site harassing the heck out of me, like targeting me. And I became infamous almost, but I didn't know really how to stop it because I didn't know much about technology, and I still don't. But it was getting so bad. It was just targeting. It was vicious. And she came to me in a dream one night, and she was running as fast as she could ahead of this marauding band of minstrel gypsy ghosts, if you will, likened to the comically bad borderline evil ghosts that you find in the cartoon Casper and the Friendly Ghost. Not Casper, but there were others that cartoon characters like that, but dressed kind of like Shriners and beating drums and blowing horns and making all kinds of raucous noises and so on. And she was warning me, honestly warning me that, you know, people were coming for me, these marauding type, minstrel gypsy types, you know. And I couldn't understand the dream for a long time, and then I realized, yes, there was a gang of these people, and it's something that's followed me for the last several years. I've been trying to shake it off. It's been really serious, this targeting. But that's how she came to me, and I've had other experiences with other animals as well, but I just wanted to share that one story with you. And she was just running as fast as she could ahead of them, and she was only about 4 or 5 pounds, and there was this huge band of these nasty type characters, and I thought she was just so courageous little thing and just really wanting to let me know that she was with me through this.
That's a cool story.
It is, and you know, they often will come to us in our dreams, and that's the easiest way for our departed loved ones, both human and animal, to get a message through to us. And just the fact that she was trying to let you know that there was something that you needed to be aware of, they watch over us. They know what's going on. They stay connected to us even after they pass away. It's incredible.
Well, it is incredible. And do you find that different breeds of animals react differently? Like Siberian Huskies as opposed to Labradors and Chihuahuas?
You know, not so much as a breed, because with any breed, you're going to have some that are extremely intelligent and reactive. You're going to have some that are not, and then the majority will fall right in the center. So it's not really so much breed specific. It's more individual. It's just like taking a random group of 100 people, and George, in that group of 100 people, you're going to have some that are really, you know, interactive and kind of high-strung. You're going to have some that are lower energy, and then most people will fall right in the middle. So it's the same with animals that I connect with.
Tom in the Bronx, it's your turn, Thomas. Welcome to the program.
Yes, I'd like to say, maybe some animals and humans have the same electrical output in the brain, like an electrical low-frequency elf that's out there. I wonder if you ever heard of elf, electrical low-frequency.
Mm-hmm. I have, sure.
Well, I'm talking to the lady here.
Oh, what about me?
Yeah.
Am I chopped liver, Tom?
Naturally.
I have not heard of that.
Well, in other words, I wonder if there was a connection between a human brain and an animal brain where they put out the same electrical frequency that other people don't.
That's really an interesting thought, because, and on that note, I will tell you that I do find that when a client contacts me because of a health issue, many times the animal will mirror that same issue. There will almost be like a duplicate going on. Something even like with diabetes. If a client is suffering from diabetes, I'll find that the animal will come down with diabetes. So there is a mirroring that takes place. So energetically, they are very similar to us and can really reflect that. I call them our little barometers, and they let us know how we're doing as a person and as a human being. So those electrical frequencies that you're talking about, I do believe that they are there, and they can really, you know how we are so connected to some of our animals. I mean, it's amazing how closely connected we are. So that would make sense to me, absolutely.
It is now Julie's turn in Wisconsin, first-time caller. Hello, Julie, good morning.
Yes, good day, holly jolly to all. I beg your pardon, George, I did not hear if Karen's going to be doing any mini readings or not.
No readings on pets, but questions or your story, Julie.
Well, I have a story about my Bichon Riley, who I rescued after he'd been tied outside for 4+ years. And it was about a month after he passed. He came to me and landed on my legs. Although he felt skeletal, I've never felt, I guess the word would be dynamism, of energy floating and moving all around my legs. Then he would come and lay right next to me, and one night I even felt like I rolled over him. 5 years later, he's still coming to me, and I can just feel him jump on the bed, and I can feel what would feel like breathing back and forth, and it's just grace, because he was one of my best friends in the world.
That is, and the fact that you are acknowledging it, and truly, the more that you ask your departed pets to send you messages and acknowledge them when you do get them, thank them, say, gosh, that was wonderful, please send me more, or I'd love it if you'd do something else. Ask them to send you more signs, and they will, and it can be anything from coins. I have one client, her name is Terry, and her deceased Great Dane would leave her exactly 11 cents. A dime and a penny. Everywhere she went, she would find 11 cents, not two nickels and a penny, a dime and a penny. Well, her dog Cooper passed away on May 11th, so the number 11 was very important to her, and wherever she went, she found that 11 cents. So that your pet was sending you signs like that, that's truly a sign of deep, deep love.
That's remarkable that it would work like that.
Mm-hmm.
Angels Camp, California, west of the Rockies. Brad's with us. Brad, go ahead.
Good evening, and good evening, Karen. I'm loving these stories that people are saying, and yours, too.
Thank you.
I have an experience from way back. This goes back to the 70s, and I had a dog that was actually my girlfriend's dog, and I could go into great detail, but I'll just tell you this little story about when he died and what led up to that. I had taken him with me to Tahoe to play for a friend of mine's wedding. And ironically, I wound up playing for my old girlfriend's wedding as well sometime later. She had gone off for a camping trip in Colorado, and I was living in Berkeley, and she actually at that time we were both living in North Oakland, but in California. But she took like 2-3 months to come back, and then when she came back, she and I had to move, so I moved with the dog, and but the thing about what happened with the dog was that I took him with me to, and he was a small dog. Somebody had mentioned a 5-pounder. Well, this one was a little more than that, but less than he was a Lhasa Apso.
Mm-hmm.
And he was such a good friend. And he had heard me. I used to drive an MGA and an old roadster, and he heard my car pull up across the street from where we used to live, where he was, and his buddy, who was a big cat, Heinz 57 variety dog, would actually open up the inside door because it had a deadbolt latch, and he'd undo the deadbolt and the door handle and open up the screen door on the outside, and then the screen door would shut. And it took me quite a while to figure this one out, but he let Sasquatch out. That was the name of my dog. And he got hit by a car crossing like a 5-lane street and broke his pelvis. And so that was a long recovery, and that was before I was going to Tahoe. When I went up to Tahoe, I didn't want to go home the same night, and so a friend of mine suggested that I go up to Minden, Nevada, where his parents had grown up and his mother had retired, and we had kicked his dog was half wolf and half
a husky.
Well, anyway, it was half wolf and half another dog, and he got in. Either he reached into my car's window that was partially open, and this was like in the summer, or Sasquatch stuck his head out far enough, or he jumped out. I couldn't believe that he could have made it out, but apparently he did, because I heard this ruckus, and I went out, and he was underneath the car, and Gypsy, he was part husky, part wolf. When I yelled at Gypsy, he came back, but I kept hearing Sasquatch. So he'd been injured internally. He had a big hematoma on the outside, and I drove him back to the only vets I could think of that had actually been Humane Society vets when I was a child, and then they started their own business, two brothers. And so I took him out there, and they patched him up. And then 6 months later or a year later, he came down with cancer.
That's not a good thing. We'll be back with final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We are with Karen Anderson, The Amazing Afterlife of Animals. And Karen, how do people get this book?
It's on Amazon right now, both in paperback and Kindle. And it is actually number 2 this week, George, on bestsellers.
I bet it'll be number 1 by tomorrow.
I'm so happy to get the word out there to everybody that they're departed pets are still with them and love them and still a part of their lives. It just makes my heart so happy.
Karen, tell me about the special bond between a child and a pet.
Well, I can only speak for myself, but I'll have to say that animals have always been the most important part of my life. I think it teaches us unconditional love, and we don't always get that from the humans in our lives. I think in families we struggle. Some of the greatest pain that I have experienced from my clients have been from families that are estranged or broken. But all of my clients who experience that kind of pain will talk about the deep love that they have with their pets going back to their childhood. And oftentimes, George, it was that pet that got them through some of the toughest times when all the other humans in their lives have let them down.
So true. All right, to the phones we go to wrap things up here, final segment. Gary in Santa Maria, California, of course. Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, George. Such an important call for me. I train, you don't know this about me, I train guide dogs for the blind and also assistive canines for quadriplegic.
Oh, good for you. No, I did not know that about you. Very good.
Well, my partner's still very active, but I had to cut myself back quite a bit. But my own two dogs I took to a whole new level. And what I found out, and I was with you on the air when my first one died 2 years ago.
Yes.
And he, over a short period of time, incarnated into his sibling. I watched it happen. She began, I used to think she was dumb as a rock. And she started picking up things before I would even teach them. She, and I wondered if Karen could confirm that when you lose a pet, they communicate in their dreams with other pets. So you may lose a pet, and that pet can either partially or absolutely fully open up themselves and accept another pet's soul.
Absolutely. I call it a shared soul. And first of all, thank you for the work that you do with the guide dog.
Yeah, that's super.
That is amazing. We need more people out there like you that are doing that because animals are so important in our lives, especially guide dogs, therapy dogs. But yes, it's called a shared soul. And sometimes they will come in and share a soul with another existing animal for a long time. And sometimes it's just for a very brief period of time. And you may only see a glimpse of them in there. Each situation is different. So that I would love to hear more about that. So you have to let me know after the show because I'd love to hear what that experience was like for you. I write about that in my book, actually, about a shared soul. So yes, that does happen.
Can people email you through your website?
Yes, there's all the information is on the website.
KarenAnderson.net, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Just amazing animal stories. I mean, this bond between human and animal is just phenomenal. Now, if somebody had a domestic, what's your definition of a domestic animal?
Well, those cats and dogs and horses and those that we spend the most time with.
So horses, of course, you're a communicator with them, and they're brilliant.
They really are. They're some of the most sensitive creatures on the planet. In fact, anyone out there who has a horse, one of the best things I can tell you is anytime that you are working with your horse, make sure that you are clear in your mind of what you want to accomplish. And this is true really for any animals, but especially horses. When we ride, they can pick up on all of our feelings, all of our emotions, everything that's going through our mind. So make sure you have a very clear image in your mind of whatever it is you want to complete. If it's a dressage or just a trail ride or whatever, keep clear images and make sure that you're not sending mixed messages. Horses will often tell me they shut their humans out and stop listening because too many mixed messages. So be very clear in your mind of what you want to accomplish. George, we often think the opposite. We often think of what we don't want to have happen when we're with our animals. For instance, if you have a horse that's maybe a little barn sour and doesn't like to be separated from the rest of the horses at the barn, you go out that day thinking, oh gosh, I hope my horse doesn't become barn sour. Well, what are you putting out there into the universe? You're putting that your horse is going to be barn sour. So you have to picture what you want. I hope my horse wants to go out and have a great ride and we're going to go on an adventure and see new things. Picture what you want. Say what you want. Say it out loud is what I tell my clients. Talk out loud about what you want to accomplish and always picture what you want.
You got it. Karen, I want to thank you for being on the program. We really appreciate it. Good luck with your book, The Amazing Afterlife of Animals. I think you'll find up when you wake up tomorrow morning, it's going to be number one.
Yes.
Thank you, Karen. Karen Anderson. Now, tradition, of course, here at Coast to Coast, where every Christmas night I play a rendition from the great broadcaster Lee Allen. It's called A Letter from Michael.
Merry Christmas, everybody. My name is Lee Allen, and the story you're about to hear has become a Christmas tradition. It's been broadcast for over 25 years on radio stations all over America. The story was given to me by Ed Hardy, news director of a radio station much like this one. It was a copy of a letter written by a young Marine named Michael, who was hospitalized after being wounded on a Korean battlefield. The letter was written home to his mother, but it was first seen and read by a Navy chaplain. In the letter, Michael describes what happened to him on that lonely, frozen battlefield. When the chaplain first saw the letter, he talked with the boy's mother, the sergeant in charge of the boy's patrol, and the patrol members themselves. Privately, they will all still tell you that what you're about to hear is a true story. We simply read the letter at Christmas time and let it stand on its own merit. The sergeant, the patrol members, and Michael are real people. The story is the letter, a copy of the original. A letter from Michael. Dear Mom, I wouldn't dare write this letter to anyone but you, because no one else would believe it. Maybe even you'll find it hard, but I've got to tell somebody. Well, first off, I'm in a hospital. Now, don't worry, you hear me? Don't worry. I was wounded, but I'm okay. You understand? Okay. The doctor says I'll be up and around in a month, but that isn't what I want to tell you. Remember when I joined the Marines last year? Remember when I left, how you told me to say a prayer to St. Michael every day? You really didn't have to tell me that. Ever since I can remember, you always told me to pray to St. Michael the Archangel. You even named me after him. Well, I always have. When I got to Korea, I prayed even harder. Remember the prayer you taught me? Michael, Michael of the morning, fresh court of heaven adorning. You know the rest of it. Well, I said it every day. Sometimes when I was marching, sometimes resting, but always before I went to sleep. I even got some of the other fellows to say it. Well, one day I was with an advanced detail way up forward of the front lines. I was plodding along in the bitter cold. My breath was like cigar smoke. I thought I knew every guy in a patrol, and alongside of me comes another Marine I'd never met before. He was bigger than any Marine I'd ever seen. He must have been 6'4" and built in proportion. Gave me a feeling of security to have such a buddy near. Anyway, there we were, trudging along. Rest of the patrol spread out. Just to start a conversation, I said, "Cold, ain't it?" And then I laughed. Here I was with a good chance of getting killed any minute, and I'm talking about the weather. My companion seemed to understand. I heard him laugh softly. I looked at him. "I've never seen you before. I thought I knew every man in the outfit." "I just joined at the last minute," he replied. "The name is Michael."
"Is that so?" I said. "That's my name, too."
"I know," he said. And then went on, "Michael, Michael of the morning."
I was too amazed to say anything for a minute. How did he know my name and the prayer that you had taught me? Then I smiled to myself.
Every guy in the outfit knew about me. Hadn't I taught the prayer to anyone who'd listen? Why, now and then they even referred to me as St. Michael.
Neither of us spoke for a time, and then he broke the silence.
"We're going to have some trouble up ahead."
He must have been in fine physical shape, for he was breathing so lightly I couldn't see his breath.
Mine poured out in great clouds. There was no smile on his face now.
"Trouble ahead," I thought to myself.
Well, with the enemy all around us, that's no great revelation.
Snow began to fall in great thick globs. In a brief moment, the whole countryside was blotted out, and I was marching in a white fog of wet, sticky particles. My companion disappeared.
"Michael!"
I shouted in sudden alarm.
I felt his hand on my arm. His voice was rich and strong. "This will stop shortly."
His prophecy proved to be correct. In a few minutes, the snow stopped as abruptly as it had begun. The sun was a hard, shining disk. I looked back for the rest of the patrol. There was no one in sight. We lost him in that heavy fall of snow. I looked ahead as we came over a little rise. Mom?
My heart stopped.
There were 7 of them, in their padded pants and jackets and funny little hats. Only there wasn't anything funny about them now. 7 rifles were aimed at us.
Down, Michael!
I screamed and hit the frozen earth. I heard those rifles fire almost as one.
I heard the bullets.
But there was Michael, still standing. Mom, those guys couldn't have missed. Not at that range.
I expected to see him literally blown to bits.
But there he stood, making no effort to fire himself. He was paralyzed with fear. It happens sometimes, Mom, even to the bravest. He was like a bird, fascinated by a snake. At least, that's what I thought then. I jumped up to pull him down and felt a sudden flame in my chest. I often wondered what it felt like to be hit. Now, I know. I remember feeling strong arms about me. Arms that laid me ever so gently on a pillow of snow. I opened my eyes for one last look. I was dying. Maybe I was even dead. I remember thinking, well, this isn't so bad. Maybe I was looking into the sun. Maybe I was in shock. But it seemed I saw Michael standing erect again. Only this time, his face was shining with terrible splendor. As I say, maybe it was the sun in my eyes, but he seemed to change as I watched him. He grew bigger. His arms stretched out wide. Maybe it was the snow falling again, but there was a brightness around him, like the wings of an angel. In his hand was a sword. A sword that flashed with a million lights. Well, that's the last thing I remember till the rest of the fellows came up and found me. I don't know how much time had passed, but now and then I had a moment's respite from the pain, fever. I remember telling them of the enemy just ahead. "Where's Michael?" I asked. I saw them look at one another. "Where's who?" asked one.
"Michael. Michael, that big Marine I was walking with just before the snow squall hit us."
"Kid," said the sergeant, "you weren't walking with anyone. I had my eyes on you the whole time. You were getting too far out. I was just going to call you in when you disappeared in the snow." He looked at me curiously. "How'd you do it, kid?"
"How'd I do what?"
I asked, half angry despite my wound.
"This big Marine named Michael and I were just..."
"Son," said the sergeant kindly, "I picked this outfit myself, and there just ain't another Michael in it.
You're the only Mike in it."
He paused for a moment. "Just how'd you do it, kid?"
"We heard shots."
"There hasn't been a shot fired from your rifle. And there isn't a bit of lead in them 7 bodies over the hill there." I didn't say anything. What could I say? I could only look open-mouthed with amazement. It was then the sergeant spoke again. "Kid," he said gently, "every one of those 7 bodies over the hill there was killed by a sword stroke." That's all I can tell you, Mom. As I say, it may have been the sun in my eyes. It may have been the cold or the pain. That's what happened. Love, Michael.
gosh, that's dramatic, isn't it? For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, Jimmy Church, Connie Willis, and the rest of the team, I'm George Norrie. Be safe, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow night.